Now to some messy wranglings over leadership positions, but not the ones dominating Australian domestic politics at the moment. After elections last November, the Parliament of Iraq needs to elect a new president, who in turn appoints the Prime Minister. The president was supposed to be chosen on Tuesday, but that vote was deferred. The front runner for Prime Minister this time is a name that might ring a bell. Nouri al-Maliki was Prime Minister of Iraq from 2006 to 2014, and he recently emerged as the preferred choice for PM of a coalition of Shia parties. On Wednesday, President Trump warned that all US assistance for Iraq would be withdrawn if al-Maliki becomes Prime Minister again. Joining us to try and make sense of this situation is Mahsin al-Shamari, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Boston College. Welcome to the program, Mahsin.
Thank you, Julian.
I had a look at the results of the November parliamentary elections, and the 329 seats seem to be spread among 40 different parties, the largest of which got less than 12% of the vote. Could you help us understand Iraq's political system and how it relates to the ethnic and religious makeup of the country?
Yeah, absolutely. So after 2003, Iraq's political system was designed so that there would be no clear group that came in as a majority and could therefore then oppress others. So it was meant to be a consensus system, one that included all sorts of different ethnic and religious groups, and one that was designed to be for coalition building and compromise. So to the point that the parliament doesn't even have the right numbers for having a government and an opposition usually. So it always looks like this. I know it looks wild to have this many parties, but this has always been the case.
Yeah, we're used to post-election coalition negotiations, but that seems incredibly complex. The system, as I understand it, is that when the parliament, which is called the Council of Representatives, elects a president, that president then has 15 days to appoint a prime minister. And that vote's, I think, now due to happen in about 12 hours' time. But why didn't the council elect a president on Tuesday this week?
So what usually happens is that the understanding is that the president of Iraq has to be Kurdish, the prime minister has to be Shia, and the speaker of parliament has to be Sunni. And so it basically falls into those ethno-religious groups to kind of decide among themselves who they want to nominate. And for the president, the Kurds took a long time to decide who they wanted to nominate, both Kurdish parties. And so they requested more time. And finally, they got their extension for February 1st, so today for you guys. And so they'll vote, like you said, in a few hours.
Let's talk about Nouri al-Maliki. Could you tell us a bit about him and in particular his history as prime minister from 2006 to 2014?
Yeah, so when he was first selected as prime minister, he really wasn't someone who was well known. And in fact, he was selected precisely for that reason and because he seemed like he would be amenable to the Americans. And in fact, he had a good relationship with them starting out. He was a member of the Iraqi opposition to Saddam Hussein before 2003. So long-time member of the Dawa party, ran for parliament, etc. But like I said, not someone that was like a known figure for Iraqis or anything like that. The issue with him is that because he was the only prime minister who had two terms, around the time of his second term, he started having problems in the sense of really losing a lot of foreign support because of the increasing sectarianism in the country. There was a belief that he had authoritarian tendencies, that he was using security forces for his own, you know, to do his own dirty work. And of course, as you know, his term basically was cut off by the beginning of the ISIS war, which was the culmination of sectarian tensions in Iraq. And he was seen as a failure in that.
Yes, and a lot of Iraqi territory obviously lost to ISIS at that time.
Yes.
Mr. al-Maliki's party, what is it? And again, how does that map on to the religious and ethnic makeup of the country and perhaps its neighbours?
Yeah, so keep in mind that the political party itself has shifted and transformed significantly over the years. So back before 2003, back in the days of the Iraqi opposition, he was a member of what's called the Dawa party, which is actually the oldest Shia Islamist party, as far as I know. And this was a huge part of the Iraqi opposition to Saddam Hussein, but they were an Islamist party. After 2003, and when the first election came about 2005, this party doesn't really officially run any anymore by that name. It's kind of dwindled into, separated into a bunch of different smaller parties. Some of them don't really cling on to the Islamist label as much. And a lot of them have actually become parties that center around personalities. So for Nour al-Maliki, his party is actually the State of Law, and it really centers around his own personality. So a lot of them have departed from the Islamist roots, but they still hold on to a lot of other ideologies, and they are basically catering to Shia constituencies for the most part.
On Sunday Extra, we're talking about the domestic politics, political situation in Iraq. And I think late last year, we talked about the fact that the UN mission in Iraq was ending. The political system that you've described, Marcin, is definitely complex. But in your view, how functional is it?
So it functions in a way that you can say that Iraq is a minimal democracy in the sense that you have parties running for, you know, people running within parties for office. You can't really predict the outcome of the elections. You don't know who's going to win. You don't know who's going to be prime minister. All of these things are determined through this, through these elections. But because of the way it's set up to be representative over everything else, it's really made for a consensus government, which means that nothing really gets done in Iraq because there is only the things that everyone can agree to will ever get done. And if there's disagreement on anything, it manifests into just political rivalries and bickering. There is also a lot of armed actors in the country tied to some political parties, which really raises like a question mark about the quality of the state and the quality of the democratization program, right? I mean, there's also a lot of corruption as well, which a lot of citizens are particularly unhappy about.
We're speaking with Marcin Alshamari, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Boston College. Marcin, how is it that Nouri al-Maliki has emerged as the likely prime minister again in 2026?
I know the timing seems really bad because right now it looks like anyone who's tied to Iran or is close to Iran is a bad bet. But this actually has a lot more to do with internal Iraqi politics than it has to do with regional or international politics. It was basically the coalition of Shia parties trying to decide among themselves who the prime minister candidate was and really hitting a brick wall with that. That resulted in some strange things going on internally, in which Prime Minister Sudani, who just recently finished his time in office, actually ended up backing Maliki and kind of pushing a kind of vote where people either had to say, yes, we support Maliki, or no, we don't. And what had originated as like a rumor or something that we hear about in every election cycle actually ended up manifesting into something real right now, which was actually quite surprising.
So from what you've said in terms of it being more about internal politics, do you think the statements of President Trump and Secretary of State Marco Rubio against Nouri al-Maliki are likely to have any impact on the domestic machinations in Iraq?
I mean, the issue is that they might be counterproductive in the sense that now the coordination framework, which had nominated Maliki, can't really back out of the nomination because it's going to look like they're acquiescing to American intervention, which is a really bad look for them. And at the same time, they probably want to because, as you saw from the threat, it's going to be pretty bad for Iraq if he does become prime minister. So now they're probably looking for a graceful exit. But recently they came out with I'm not quite sure if it's a statement, but they basically made it clear that they're still backing him. So what we might see is a graceful exit from him in order to preserve the situation in the country, but it's kind of a no-win and it's counterproductive for the Americans too.
You mentioned Iran and its influence. Could you just speak a little bit more about the connections between Iran and various parts of the Iraqi political establishment and how much influence is wielded in that regard?
Yeah, so people tend to assume that Iran has control only over Shia political parties in Iraq. But actually, because of the extensive border that stretches from north to south in the country, Iran over the years has crafted very strong ties with different ethno-religious parties, not just the Shia. So, for example, has strong relationships with Kurdish parties as well. And even among the Shia, it's crafted relationships with particular political parties and not with others, depending on usually like a past history in opposition in the country, like these people have spent time in Iran and they've managed to like create a relationship with them. But Iran also backs armed actors in Iraq, which is where it gets problematic and tense.
In terms of those armed actors, who are they, and to what extent do they threaten the tentative democratic political system you've described?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, any armed actor is a huge threat to the democratic political system of any country. So in Iraq, some segments of the popular mobilization forces are associated with Iran, and particularly what's called the Axis of Resistance among them, that have distinguished themselves particularly as a group that has made their loyalty to Iran quite vocal. All that being said, you can see that they're all concerned with the situation, because Iran has never been less powerful in the last, you know, several decades. And I think they're very much aware of that. And they're trying to keep up this image of being Iran's allies without the necessary tax of it, which is, you know, they're going to be pushed out of the political system, or they might be targeted by the U.S.
Fascinating stuff, Marcin. Thank you so much for explaining it for us. Given the complications that you've described, this seems like a pretty tough one to finish up with. But what do you think is going to happen? Who's going to be the next prime minister?
Oh, that's a tough one. But I don't think it's going to be Maliki, actually. I think we're going to end up with another compromise candidate. So someone that we might have not heard of unless you follow Iraqi politics super well.
Well, we've got a little bit of a taste, but clearly we're not quite at the level to be able to predict the next prime minister there. Thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra today.
Thank you.
That's Marcin Alshamari, who's Assistant Professor of Political Science at Boston College. This is Julian Morrow with you on Sunday Extra, and it's 35 minutes past seven.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.